prnoticias.com Podcast Onda Mujer. Play.
¿Tienes que preparar una entrevista en inglés? ¿Te vas de vacaciones al extranjero o simplemente necesitas mejorar tu speaking? Lo que necesitas es Milingual.com, una forma diferente de mejorar el inglés. Milingual organiza grupos de conversación reducidos por niveles y en locales de moda de Madrid. Y lo mejor, siempre guiados y corregidos por profesores nativos. Además, incluye una bebida y muchos descuentos especiales. Es muy flexible, por 10 euros apúntate cuando tú quieras en nuestra plataforma Milingual.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Women's Radio, a time when we get together to talk about issues that interest women, share experiences, and of course learn English while we do it. Today, here at Onda Mujer Radio, we have Natasha, who is the founder of Let's Education. We are also pleased to announce that we have two other visitors. They are Noemi and Elena. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Onda Mujer and Milingual Spain. So, let's get started.
Glad I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, but not for long. The future.
Are you an English teacher? Are you interested in teaching Spanish? Are you a woman entrepreneur? Maybe you've heard of TT Madrid or Let's Education, one of the most well-known English teacher training programs and a very popular language school for foreigners studying Spanish in Madrid. Natasha comes to speak with us today about her experience starting these programs in the right place, in the right time. So, Natasha, how did you come up with the idea to start TT?
I think it was mainly due to the bad experience I'd had on my TEPL course. It doesn't exist anymore, so I don't have to be mean. But there wasn't much love to the course. It was very much go in, do it. There was a high failure rate. And I just thought I could do a better job on very little money. So it was a very exciting time. I don't necessarily think if I'd have known what I know now, I would have been brave enough to do it. But I didn't know anything, so I was.
Huh. And Madrid, what brought you to Madrid and teaching English? And how did that all start? Obviously, that started before TT did.
It was a man. My now husband, then boyfriend, had been living here for 5 years. I was 28 and wondering where this was going. I had a background in law and human resources, and I just decided to move over. I decided after a night out with some girlfriends and phoned him at 3 o'clock in the morning. Mm. I was definitely more excited than him at that particular point. And 3 months later, I was here, but I didn't speak Spanish.
Uh-huh.
Hence, really, the only option was to become an English teacher. So I looked around, did a TEFL, and started working and loved it from day one. I was really surprised.
So I was curious, what were your first weeks like as an English teacher? Fresh out of the course, a bit nervous, excited. Well, how did it go? What do you remember from those moments?
I remember thinking I'm getting paid a lot less than I was previously, and I seem to be more stressed than I ever could have imagined. I think it was just the running around and meeting new people and still not having a great grasp on grammar. It was challenging. Within 2 or 3 months, I really got into my groove and I absolutely loved it. It was rewarding, and you just got to meet so many cool people.
And who were you teaching at that point?
Mainly executives. I was older. I had a background, as I said, my background. So I tended to teach a lot of individual classes, you know, KPMG, those type of companies, and some private classes as well. Kids were absolutely not my thing. They terrified me, so I stuck with adults.
So did you say that when you came here, you didn't know anything about Spanish, right?
Nothing. I was like, hola, vodka.
And so did you have many problems with Spanish when you came here?
Obviously, it was challenging. Yes, it was very, very challenging. I was really determined to learn. My husband works for an international company, and I used to think his Spanish was amazing and very sexy. I'm now like, oh, my Lord, go and have a Spanish class. But I put a lot of effort into it. I went to a lot of classes. I did a lot of intercambios. It was actually quite challenging finding an intercambio that actually wanted to talk. And I put a lot of effort into it. My grammar's still not the best, but I feel very confident with my Spanish.
And with the students, because here in Spain it's really common that when you're in an English class, you always try to speak in Spanish no matter what. Mm. I mean, I don't know if it depends on the age, but in my case, many people try to speak in Spanish in the English class.
It's constant. And in the Spanish classes, everyone speaks English. But if I had a group of beginners, for example, who were 60, they were due for retirement and they'd been offered gym membership and they didn't want to go to the gym. So they offered them English classes instead. They said their total was Coca-Cola, Hello, and David Beckham. And I didn't speak any Spanish, and I'm really bad at drawing. So we've had lots of fun over the difference between a pig and a cow. And it was, they learned because we had no choice. And everything they learned was connected with humour and silly things happening. And I was getting confused about what the other person was saying. And it was great.
So you arrived in Madrid chasing love, which seemed to work out in your case. And you did a TEFL class and you just started teaching?
Yep, exactly that. Nothing more complicated than that. There's so much work here, which hasn't stopped, that there's always classes.
Mm, no, I'm familiar with the scene myself as I'm constantly running around. So how did you come up with the material or the focus or the information and the resources to run a teacher training program that offers TEFL certification, as far as I know?
Yeah. Obviously, I did a course, mm-hmm. so I'd learned a lot from that and a lot what I didn't learn. When I actually left England, so I was halfway through my master's in training and development, and where I'd been working in HR, my specialty was training. So the training side of it came quite natural. Mm-hmm. So there was parts of the course that I wanted to include, like NLP, feedback loops, and stuff that we hadn't necessarily covered. And grammar's grammar. It's not as if you can rewrite grammar. It's not as if you can suddenly change the past simple to become something else.
Those
kinds of issues. And obviously I used a lot of the experiences I'd had with a couple of years teaching on classroom management, on lesson planning. There's methodologies out there. You either use ESA or PPP. We use PPP, which is like a presentation practice production, which is great for newbie teachers. So I read a lot, studied a lot, and built the course.
Continue.
And it's changed a lot over time. Mm-hmm. As the industry changes, as we grow in knowledge, we update the course, we change the course. You know, telephone classes weren't a thing, and then they became Skype classes, and now they're virtual classes. So we constantly have to update.
Sure, it sounds like your business and is continuously growing. You started TT 10 years ago, no?
10 years ago, last October.
Oof. Happy decade. And then maybe 6 years ago or so, you started with La Aventura Española. No?
We started that 3 years ago when we moved into our new building. Mm-hmm. We used to have a very small academy that I loved. It was like my baby, kind of like the ugly baby that only the mum appreciates. Sure. It was a bit like that. And when we moved into the new space, one of the issues we had was because we trained teachers, obviously when they go and have classes, they become quite demanding because you know when a teacher hasn't planned, you know when they are not doing things in the correct way. So it was easier for us to have our own Spanish school and then we could train the teachers in the way I wanted them to teach. We get a lot of our Spanish teachers to do the TEFL course or we give them coaching or training. We're very selective with our teachers because we need them to be very non-traditional, very interactive. Our groups are small. We only have a maximum of six in a group, much like English classes, mm-hmm. because I think it's much more effective.
And what are the structure of your Spanish classes like, out of curiosity?
It's general. It's what's out with most academies. We have classes from 9:30 to 1:30 every day, although students can come for breakfast as well. I'm a big fan of you need to eat before you study, and lots of people don't have time for breakfast, so you can come for breakfast and there's a Spanish teacher there and have coffee, of course. And between 1 and 1:30, we run a confidence to communicate class. So the idea is different groups get together and you practice what you did in the classroom. We try and change the environment because you can often get very cozy and comfortable in an environment with your teacher. And then when you actually go to do something, you get really nervous and you lack confidence. So the confidence to communicate classes are supposed to be fun and engaging and help you interact with other people.
Sounds useful and exciting.
I think it is.
And are the majority, I've read that you're quite keen on the idea of supporting non-native teachers, non-native English teachers. What percentage of your students following your TEFL training program are non-native English speakers?
28%.
28%. Mm-hmm. And where are the majority of the students from?
All over Europe. And we get a lot from Europe, although we also get Philippines, Morocco, etc. We get a lot less Spanish than I would like. I would say probably get about 6 or 7 Spaniards a year, which is, I think, a shame.
Maybe it seems a stupid question, but I mean, I made a project for my university about the thing about teachers native and non-native when learning English. And I made a survey, and people said that they prefer a native speaker of English. And the reasons were just because they are native, their pronunciation would be perfect. But in my opinion, I think that being native, it doesn't give you the condition of being a teacher. So what do you think?
I think being native means you can speak English. It doesn't mean you can teach it. I think one of the benefits, or many of the benefits, about non-native teachers is that you've got so amazingly good at what you do and the strategies that you put in place that you've actually got good enough to teach it. And that's, you can't understand how to learn a language unless you've actually learnt it. And obviously, if you're native, it's like Spanish. You know, if I say to you, oh, I'm having problems with a subjuntivo, explain it to me. You're like, well, it's the subjuntivo. So it's the same if you have a non-native teacher. They've been through everything. They've learned amazing learning strategies in order to acquire the information, hold the information, adapt the information. So I think there's a lot you can learn from non-native teachers. I think people are obsessed with accents, which is, I think, a shame because I don't know what an English accent is. You know, is it from Newcastle? Is it Cockney? I think everyone thinks that we all speak like the Queen, and that if you have a few classes with an English teacher or an American teacher, you're going to sound like that. And, you know, you need to be able to communicate effectively. The accent really doesn't matter, but it's a big thing here at the moment, and I think it's time to get over it.
Yeah, it's definitely a point of controversy in which native speakers who have next to no teaching ability or specific knowledge of grammar and whatnot are given precedent over those who've studied and have experience and are much more capable of explaining the material themselves.
Absolutely. And it's where Spain's at. You know, I think people are very negative about where Spain's at with English. I think it's doing amazingly well at the moment. I think the progress Spain has made in the last 6 to 7 years has been outstanding. And I think what people forget is as the level of the children goes up, that will flow back into the education system as they become teachers. So the level will continue to rise. And I mean, realistically, by the year 2035, we should be looking at very competent English speakers leading the system. They're going to then come back in to become teachers. So the quality is just going to get better and better. And hopefully we'll have less reliance on, you know, needing language assistance, et cetera, et cetera. We can invest the money in Spanish teachers of English like they do in countries like Germany.
No, definitely. But, I mean, it just takes a long time for those kinds of situations to complete the full circle, as you said, for the youngsters now to grow up, to go through university and then to come back and teach?
It does. It's a slow process, but one which I think Spain has accelerated to some extent. I think it's putting a lot of money and time. I think it hasn't got it quite right yet, but I think it's developing in a really in a good way. I think what's needed is more money and time for teachers.
Sure.
You know, at the moment, it works on a bilingual program that works on like a CLIL system. So the idea is of a CLIL system where you teach, for example, sciences in English, is that you have a content specialist and a language specialist, but you tend to have one or the other. You've got an English teacher who knows absolutely nothing about science, or you've got a science teacher who doesn't know very much English. The idea is you have both those things, but there's not the money for it at the moment, which I think is a shame. And I think there'll be problems in the next 20 years with Spain having good scientists.
Sure.
Because if you're learning this is a leaf, it is green, as opposed to osmosis or I can't remember.
Sure, photosynthesis.
Exactly. I think that's challenging.
So, as you said, CLIL, I studied that too. And I mean, for me, it was really interesting because my teacher told us that if you introduce CLIL now in Spanish classes, for example, you learn English in a more natural way because the real purpose of the class is not to learn the grammar or the words, is to learn science, for example, and your main goal is not to learn the language. So I think it's very interesting. I didn't know anything about it. And personally, my experience when learning English was like, okay, today we're going to do the past simple and that's it. You forgot, you don't speak, you don't practice. And when you come to the real world, you don't know how to use it, when do you have to use it. So I think that CLIL is something that I was very interested in class, and I think it's very interesting.
I think it's fascinating, and I think it's a great way of doing it, but it needs the resources for it to be effective. And if you don't have those resources, it's kind of, you've got CLIL, as opposed to CLIL, which is not ideal. A lot of countries, for example, do sciences. So they might do the mornings in English and the afternoons in Spanish. So you learn both subjects. And you've got that to constantly put in a framework under what you're learning. I think, I mean, both have their pros and cons. But what Spain's doing is great, but we just need more money.
Sure.
And more training.
More money in terms of...
training.
Sure, training the teachers and making them be able to teach their material better. And what is important when you're looking for people who are interested in doing the TEFL course? What are important characteristics or qualities that those people tend to have?
You definitely can't be lazy and do our course. You can't be like a scrungy teenager, like, dude, I don't know. It's just not the right course for you. We often send people to a different academy that's much lighter than ours, much more fun. They do a lot more drinking. ours is hardcore. It's for very long weeks. But I think there's not many careers you can change a career for in 4 weeks and then get paid decent money to do it. And I think the money is, I know no one gets rich on teaching English in Spain, but considering the economy we're in, I think you can make a decent living as an English teacher, especially if you're a quality English teacher. So definitely having motivation to spend the hours. Most of the time they're in the school from 9:30, well, they're in class from 9:30 to 6:30, and then most stay for a couple of hours to do homework. And then you've got 10 to 15 hours homework over the weekend. But it's 4 weeks, and the people the other side who you're going to be teaching deserve for you to be a decent teacher. So if you're not willing to give up a few beers for 4 weeks, then don't do the course and don't be a teacher.
Sure. And besides the infamous TEFL class, what are other training options or courses that you recommend for people who are interested in pursuing English teaching?
I mean, I think reading has to be a very important part just to keep up with methodologies, idea, like these concepts of CLIL. The flipped classroom is huge at the moment. There's so many blogs out there for teaching. We run ongoing professional development training on Saturdays, for example, and we do everything from the flipped classroom to marketing yourself as a teacher, to new games and activities. Often you can get to kind of March, April, and you're kind of running out of steam a little bit. whether it be kids or adults. So we have an adult program and a kids program, and you can come in and get more information. We do child psychology, because often you don't even, I mean, when I started, eventually starting to teach a few kids, I knew they were short. That was pretty much it. That was my knowledge of kids.
Short.
They were little.
Okay, small in size.
Yes, that was about my whole knowledge of children's abilities. Obviously knowing more than that. So I went, I got some books, I read some stuff. Having had my own child, it's been quite handy. I'm like, oh, you can do that. Oh, fantastic, interesting. So yeah, just I think getting out there, reading a lot, and talking to other teachers. Teachers are great at sharing resources. We've got a really nice teacher support group on Facebook, and people can just ask questions and not be judged. And it can be like, okay, I know I should know the answer to this, but I don't understand why this sentence works. Or I've got a really difficult student. I really don't know what to do next with him. And so, you know, other teachers can share ideas. I think they're a big resource for each other.
Hmm. And the majority of people who come and are interested in your courses, how old are they? Do they tend to be fresh out of university youngsters, or do you see a whole range of profiles?
A whole range of profiles. Our minimum age is 21, although we've taken a couple of girls, no young boys, but girls, strangely. We've had a 16-year-old and an 18-year-old who wiped the floor with everyone else. They were so impressive. They were just those type of girls who were just massive achievers. It really depends on the time of year. August, September, October, November courses tend to be very young, just out of university or maybe a year into a job and gone, ooh, this wasn't what I'd signed up for. I'm going to Spain. Whereas, and January, a real mix. February, March, April, May courses tend to be much older. Our average age can be around 35, 40. We've had up to 70. It tends to be people who are changing lives, changing careers, post-divorce, a completely different feel, a completely different dynamic. People who maybe haven't studied, you know, left university 20 years ago. They may have different technology skills. Just completely, completely different. And, you know, the August courses, which are fun and vibrant, but you get a lot of homesickness, a lot of cultural shock, whereas this time of year it tends to be lack of confidence because they haven't studied.
Sure.
So they tend to have different emotional needs as well, which is something we take very seriously at the school.
Hmm. That's an interesting comparison. It's not something that I would have thought of. And so why is it, do you think, that Spain has taken so long to jump on the multilingual bandwagon? Besides their local languages, I understand, are very important, those who speak Spanish and Basque or Catalan or Galician.
Yes.
What do you think kept them from being so proactive 15 years ago, like many other places in Europe?
Honestly, I think a lot of it was due to Franco. You know, Spain was held in suspended animation when all other countries were kind of growing within their educational systems, growing in terms of travel and moving around Europe. Spain wasn't. It was just frozen still. So that's why it's playing catch up. So its educational system is probably still more traditional than I would like. Especially as a mum. And, you know, that's going to take time to evolve because it's a consciousness as well. You know, a lot of people are aware that things are not quite right but don't know how to change it yet. So as the teachers learn, go to university, and now with the Bologna Agreement where it's much more project-based, they should, again, filter back through the system and want to do more project-based learning. And, you know, and I think that all filters into English. You need to have the skills and the motivation and knowledge for it to be useful. I also think English is a bit, you know, it's like never ending. There's no, you just constantly learn English, and people don't really have goals and objectives. You pay for your classes, you go to your classes, or your company pay for your classes, you go to your classes, and you don't have a definable objective. When I worked with my students, I was always very, very, very passionate about, okay, in this 8 weeks, we are going to do this. And I will use physical violence if you don't meet my objectives. I also did a course recently on neuro-language coaching, which is all very, very about breaking down. It's how the synapses in the brain works and how you kind of use information and to make it easier to learn a language. It sounds boring, but honestly, I was fascinated. But also it's about these goal settings that you can really break down and work out what people need as opposed to I want to increase my level of English. Well, why? What's it for? What are you doing with it? What in particular are you having problems with? So you can really help students identify objectives that they can actually reach as opposed to, oh, I just want to get on the next book or or never finishing a book. I don't think I've ever taught class where we've actually finished a book. So I think it's a bit of a shame that English is just this long term thing that, that doesn't end at the moment. And I think people need to concentrate more on what they want from it.
And you've talked a bit about your newest project, which is a virtual academy in line with the new cyber world where everything is digital and online. How did you come up with that idea and what made you make it a reality?
Obviously, Skype classes have been around for quite a few years now and have been very, very popular. But for me, they just don't give you the experience and the tools you need to give a good class. So it was more from my experiences initially as an English teacher with the frustrations of what Skype could give me. Also, as a mum who owns a business who lives in the middle of the mountains, I struggle for time.
Don't we all?
Yeah, so, you know, kind of I get the feeling that I'm juggling balls of jelly sometimes. So for me to take my Spanish classes is really, really difficult to actually physically go. I mean, obviously, I have a Spanish school now, which makes life easier. But even now I'm finding it hard, whereas the virtual classes for me are really easy. I can put my son to bed, log in, get a glass of wine, get into my pajamas. I leave a t-shirt on top, so it's not obvious, and have my class. But we wanted it to feel like a real experience in a classroom. Mm-hmm. And so there's a whiteboard, there's interaction, you can put your hand up, we can do them in groups, or we can do them in single classes. The students can write on the board, we can put you in pairs, and the teacher can go and visit your room. So it's really lovely. I think it's as real as we're going to get in the virtual world.
Sure. And do you think that there's still a benefit or advantage of having a physical classroom, or that the virtual academy can be almost as practical or efficient as physically being together? I understand that there's not everybody can be in a classroom, and then that flexibility is important. But from your experience as someone who's taught quite a bit, seeing it from the other side, perhaps, how do you digest all that?
I think if I had a choice for most of my students, I would choose for them to be in a physical classroom, because I think it's a lot easier for us to see what's going on their face, if they're struggling with a particular partner in the class. I think it's easier for us to take them aside and try and pep up their confidence, or to deal with any of the kind of emotional baggage. As adults, we tend to come with a lot of emotional baggage about language learning or any kind of learning. We've had negative experiences, good experience. We've had that teacher we loved and we want it taught that way, and then we get a different teacher. So I think we find it challenging. As adults, we're less adaptable than kids. But I think the virtual classroom is 95% there. Mm-hmm. But it lacks, obviously, that last 5%, which is the human interaction, the touch, the feel, the hand on the shoulder to say, you're doing a great job, don't worry, et cetera, et cetera.
Or the smile or the wink, whatever it may be. Exactly. That just gets lost in cyberland.
Yes.
Well, that sounds really great. I'm so glad that you came. And I've, as a teacher myself, I've been quite curious as to what is this TT phenomenon all about? And hearing about the different projects that you've started. And we're always looking for more guests, whether you're an English speaker or interested in learning and improving your spoken English. If you'd like to be here in the studio with us, please sign up for a session at melingual.com. And thanks again for participating, Natasha and Noemi.
Thank you for having me.
And definitely visit the website melingual.com to sign up for a session if you're interested. And you can follow us on Onda Mujer and Milingual on Twitter and Facebook. Thank you very much.